Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
So, I find so much of this whole life experience, at times I'm so overwhelmed by it. Not in the way that I was always overwhelmed by it. Today I'm at times so intrigued about just how much is happening. This whole living experience is overwhelming at times. I'm not talking about from the conditioned state, from the state of, I have to get to this place, I have to be here. But I'm talking about this way of just seeing the magic in everything. I missed the second bell as we started the Heart Sutra, and it was because I was listening to all of us chanting the Heart Sutra, and I just thought it was so neat, you know. I got caught up in the beauty of us chanting this strange thing together. So I missed my second cue. And I think that was kind of the reason I wrote what I wrote tonight about this ambition versus passion. Ambition is this thing that I must get to. And passion is seeing this thing that I am in, you know. And not just seeing it, but really trying to be with it. To really immerse ourselves in all of it, you know. To immerse ourselves in the strangeness of sound, the beauty of light, you know, the beauty of all this immense experience that's happening around us at all times. I had this little thing that I wrote, the game of form and emptiness. You know, ego is constantly trying to run towards this form, and true self is constantly trying to be in this emptiness. So we're living in this strange in-between. It seems as though the main problem in this human experience has very little to do with what goes on around us, but rather what's happening from moment to moment within us. But if we're to go a step further, we are also the things going on around us. We are all of it. When sound emits from our voice, your body, my body, picks up the vibration of the sound. Om, you know, picks it up in every way possible. Sometimes you even feel it. When you're close to the bell, you feel the bell. You know, you don't just hear it. But very rarely do we live in just the experiential essence of a situation. We also live in the thinking about the situation. So this is this game that we seem to be trapped in. You know, this game of form and emptiness, this game of experience, and this game of analysts. You know, the analyst is constantly describing. Have you ever noticed that? I'm constantly narrating everything I do. Okay, I'm putting my sock on. Oh, sock feels good today. Oh, I like this sock. I put on another sock. Oh, this sock feels funny. I'm constantly narrating This whole process that I in everything I do. Okay, now I'm going to sit on the toilet. Oh, I got all this stuff to do. Oh, but I'm sitting on the toilet. It's all this crazy stuff. Am I the only one that's Because at times, I think at least for myself, when I started realizing that this is happening, did you notice that I didn't say that I'm doing this? But this is happening. It at times it feels a little, it feels crazy. You feel a little crazy. And there's the key. I am not doing this, but the body is doing this. I am not growing my hair. My body is growing my hair. I am not digesting my food. My body is digesting the food. This whole dance that we are immersed in, you know, that we are, well, I think in a way we're stuck with, you know, at least for this round, you know. This round we were born into this human body. And I think if there is this intelligence, it wants to experience the human form. You know, maybe the intelligence of the bell wants to experience the sound of the bell. I don't know if a tree ever wanted to experience being a table, but it's now a table, you know. So very rarely are we just living in the experiential notice aspect of life. But for most of us, we can say that this human problem, the human dis-ease, if you will, is that we live primarily from the analytical process. We live in this analytical way that we never step into the experiential. And the experiential is it's not so easy to do. This is how we've become so stuck, as if our skulls were 5 miles across and our brains were normal size. Everything echoes around in there. Bzz, you know. As long as we humans remain in this state, which we all are, we will continue to operate primarily from the intellect, primarily from the analyst. Meditation, on the other hand, is a doorway into wisdom. And by wisdom, I mean the inherent wisdom each of us was born with. I met with a group of men this weekend for a men's retreat, and very many of them were, almost all of them were very new to meditation. So it's always interesting trying to open a pathway to give somebody an idea of what we're trying to do here, you know. And I tell everybody all the time, this is not meditation. When you're sitting in this position called Zazen, this is not meditation. You are just sitting Zazen. It is where we are placing our attention that makes it either just sitting like a stone, or we are actually sitting in awareness and attention of what's happening. So I had a couple of the guys, because they kept asking, how do I do this? And I said, listen, just close your eyes. And I said, put your hand out. And I said, now, without looking at your hand, can you sense that it's in the air, that you are holding it up? And they said, yes. And I said, without looking at your other hand, can you tell that it's on your lap? Yes. I said, without checking, can you tell that you are sitting in a chair? And I just went down this path of like, can you hear the birds? Can you hear the cars rushing by? I said, now open your eyes. I said, that is meditation. It is the awareness of what is happening in every moment without thinking about what is happening in every moment. And this seemed to be a neat little thing for some of these guys. They had this little attraction to it from that place. And I think as teachers, as practitioners, that's really the only thing we can offer somebody, is maybe inspiration to try for themselves. So learning how to offer that is a really interesting thing. So if our conditioned life, and we have to see how powerful this conditioning is, if our conditioned life literally imprisons us to live from ambition only, well, then passion is very difficult to tap into. And if we look at our, especially our society, the American society, from the minute you're big enough, somebody goes, what do you want to be when you grow up? Which basically means, how are you going to make money to take care of yourself? You know, it really doesn't mean, what do you think you're going to love to do? You know, nobody asked me that. What do you think you want to do when you grow up? I don't know. You know, I want to just be a kid. I don't want to grow up. But the way that we're conditioned, we go to school and you must have A's and B's to be a good student. You must be involved in sports. You must have the right clothes. You must live in the right home. All of this stuff is so deeply ingrained in our societal views. And if you are not a part of that status, well, it's very easy to see how you become an outcast, you know. And I also know people that were of that status that also felt as an outcast. So what is that all about? Now we get into the psychosis and the psychology of this mental state of not fitting in, not being a part of, even if you're born into millions, you know. So if we're to analyze ambition, it's easy to see how we've arrived at this place of this collective consciousness. You know, maybe we can talk about the whole world, but maybe we'll just talk about this American collective, you know. I believe it's going on around the whole world, but this American collective consciousness. And that is the conditioning that we have all been born into, and which in fact we are all a part of, you know. And I don't know if you can fully shed this skin, but we can definitely be aware of it. So this collective consciousness is in fact more of an unconsciousness. Because if we look at what ambition is, ambition says you must get over there to be okay. And what we know in this self-consciousness and this true consciousness is that I am okay right here without any of those things. Actually, we know for a fact that the people that have the least in life generally to be the happiest, you know. Ambition is the energy in which we exercise to get to a desired goal. My goal. That's the difference. This is somewhat easy to recognize, that as long as I live in this ambition to get someplace, I will live in a state of stress and anxiety and frustration. Because I am never at peace in chasing something. Think about that. There's a line in a book and it says, the ability to control and enjoy is addiction. How can you control and enjoy something? You know, it's like picking up an alligator and trying to control and enjoy it. You know, can you do that? The thing's trying to eat your face. So anytime I'm stressed, anxious, or nervous, it's usually a sign that I am living from a place of ambition. Even if that ambition is just to find peace. Even if that ambition is just to find a quiet place. I don't know how many times I hear people when they talk of spiritual practices, I just want to get to that place of peace. I just want to find that peace. And I say, where are you going to look? Where are you going to find that at? I want this desired result. And what in fact I'm saying is, I am not interested in experiencing it. It's like taking the trip across country, and I'm just waiting to get to Disneyland in California. And I miss the entire country across the way. Imagine, if you will, if the sun was driven by ambition. Its only goal was to give sunlight and nutrients to all the trees. And so the planet, knowing this, grew such a thick forest. The trees were so tall and dense that it actually turned the ground into nighttime so that the rest of the living beings would be deprived of its life-giving force. This is what it's like to live in this dualistic state of the individual, this me, this I. We blot out our own light in hopes to everything in hopes of gaining one small thing, peace. But we know that the sun gives equally to all sentient beings, as well as non-sentient beings. Krishnamurti had a beautiful writing. A still mind is not seeking experience of any kind. And if it is not seeking and therefore is completely still, without any movement from the past and therefore free from the known, then you will find, if you have gone that far, that there is a movement of the unknown that is not recognized, that is not translatable, that cannot be put into words. Then you will find that there is a movement which is of the immense. That movement is of the timeless, because in that there is no time, nor is there space, nor something in which to experience, nor something to gain, to achieve. Such a mind knows what is creation. Not the creation of the painter, the poet, the verbalizer, but that creation which has no motive, which has no expression. That creation is love and death. This whole thing from the beginning to the end is the way of meditation. A man who would meditate must understand himself. Without knowing yourself, you cannot go far. However much you may attempt to go far, you can only go so far as your own projection. And your own projection is very near, is very close, and does not lead you anywhere. Meditation is that process of laying the foundation instantly, immediately, and bringing about naturally, without any effort, that state of stillness. And only then is there a mind which is beyond time, beyond experience, and beyond knowing. I think for most of us, at least for myself, when I would start reading these kind of things, the parts that he describes of this no self, this no time, this no thing to know is kind of scary. My whole life has been paved on this idea of getting to something, which means I must know something to get to that something. And then the Buddha just goes, thump. None of that matters, you know? Passion is a completely different energy. Not love, not that kind of passion, not romantic passion. Rather, the passion that doesn't need anything in return. And so sometimes we have to know what this difference of ambition and passion is. Roshi would always say, it's so beautiful, that line he would always say. And he said, we don't understand unconditional love because we put conditions on our love. And so, as Krishnamurti writes about, and as I experience in my own life, how do I see what this passion is? How do I operate from this place of passion? And I think it's, at first, the key is to see what my conditions are. Just like Krishnamurti wrote, you must know yourself. I must know myself. If I don't find out what my obstacles are, what my conditions are, what my afflictions are, if you will, all of that stuff is from this conditioned mind, and it has been put there for a certain reason, or I should say, it has been adopted for a certain reason. And even that I must come to know. What is the reason that this still operates, you know? In some ways, the passion this is pointing towards is similar to the sun's rays. It can come to life in all our situations, both physically, mentally, and emotionally. This is where Buddhism is often referred to as Buddhist psychology. That's where this starts to get wild. I start to investigate myself. What makes me tick, you know? How many obstacles do I have? How many obstacles do you have? How much of this are we willing to uncover so that we can actually be a whole person in this lifetime? A whole person. Not just a fraction or a part or a half, but this wholeness, you know. So I just wanted to read this one more thing. This is a writing that Chogyam Trungpa did about Jukai, which is the ceremony of taking the Bodhisattva precepts, the sowing of the raksu and making this vow in our life to live a certain way. He says, by taking refuge, in some sense, we become homeless refugees. The point of becoming a refugee is to give up our attachment to basic security. We have to give up our sense of home ground, which is illusory anyway. We are suspended in no man's land, in which the only thing to do is to relate with the teachings and with ourselves. The refuge ceremony represents a final decision. The ceremony cuts the line that connects the ship to the anchor. It marks the beginning of an odyssey of loneliness. Still, it also includes the inspiration of the preceptor and the lineage. Acknowledging that the only real working basis of is oneself. The only real working basis is of oneself, and that there is no way around that. One takes refuge in the Buddha as an example, in the Dharma as a path, and in the Sangha as companionship. At that particular point, the energy, the power, and the blessing of basic sanity that has existed in the lineage for 2,500 years is an unbroken tradition and discipline from the time of Buddha. Enters your system, and you finally become a full-fledged follower of Buddha Dharma. You are a living future Buddha at that point. So if I come back to the beginning, we are all of it. We are dancing in this strange experience of the song and the dancer, the music and the player, the knower and the known, the unknown and the mystery. All of it is happening within us. But I have to see this for myself. And Chogyam Trungpa really points to it here. It is this this odyssey of loneliness, which sounds kind of terrible. But I think in a sense, he's saying that I must go off on my own in some way to really see myself. I started experiencing this when I would start walking out in public in my robes. And in the Zendo, you know, mostly when Roshi was alive, mostly we would just come to the Zendo, we would put our robes on, we would do our practices and our programs, and then we would take the robes off and go home. And I wanted to know what it was like to be a monk in the world. So I asked Roshi one time if I could walk to the Zendo from my house in my robes. And he said, absolutely not. And I did anyway. I've always been quite the unfollower of rules. And for the first time in my life, I was thrown into the world with all of these expectations, all of these senses firing, all of this stuff happening. And I saw some really amazing stuff. I saw people give me the finger. I saw people smile and wave. I saw people look at me like I was a fish in a bowl. I had the cops pull me over. I had guys in garbage trucks that I knew that pulled over. Hey, Kevin, what are you doing? This whole like experience was born out of me stepping into that unknown. And it was all from this, I want to know what it's like to be a Buddha in this life. I want to know what that is. It sounds so amazing on paper, and yet I have so many fears. I have so many desires that keep me, entrapped in this human, form. And this to me was the real passion of Buddha, was that he had all of the same crap, and he transcended it. Not that he floated out of his body and became this like strange spirit, but that he lived with it, but not of it. And I thought that was, to me, this is the real beauty of the Buddha Dharma. The real message of the Buddha Dharma is that we live in this human existence with all of its foibles, all of its strangeness, all of its wonder. And I want to taste all of it. I can't do that when I have 10,000 obstacles within me. I can't do it when I'm constantly chasing everything. I can't do it. So this refuge, this stepping out, this stepping back is at the core of us practitioners. Whether you take the vows and you decide to go further, or you never take those vows, it is the same exact practice. It's the same exact essence, all of it, you know? Mm-hmm.